Strangers. This episode of Strange and Unexplained with Daisy Egan is brought to you by Alloy Health. Dealing with menopause alone? It's not just you. Almost 50% of women wait 3 or more years before seeking relief from menopause symptoms. Not me. I got a whiff of the change and took myself to get help. But many women endure years of hot flashes, awful sleep, brain fog, and mood swings. Some don't know where to start. Some asked their doctor and got dismissed. Do you know how many of my girlfriends told me their doctors put them on birth control for hormone replacement therapy? Look, menopause happens. The suffering doesn't have to. We all know that if cis men went through menopause, there would be free hormone dispensers on every corner. The rest of us have to jump through hoops for our care. With Alloy, there's no more hoops, just access to great help so you can feel your best. Alloy solutions are available by prescription, so you'll start with a quick online form. You'll be matched with a board-certified menopause specialist physician who reviews your intake and creates a personalized treatment plan tailored to your needs. Plus, you get unlimited messaging with your doctor. Once approved, your prescription ships straight to you. No pharmacy, no hassle. But if you're not into taking hormones for whatever reason, Alloy also has amazing skincare products that address the signs of aging that come with menopause. I absolutely love my Alloy eye cream. Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use code STRANGE. Your menopause specialized doctor will tailor your treatment to your exact needs. Plus, you get unlimited messaging with your doctor. Head to myalloy.com and use code STRANGE to get $20 off. What would you do for a cure-all solution to your aches, your persistent troubles, your imperfections? And who would you trust to make that cure-all and administer it? When does feeling worse to feel better go too far? And where is the line between medicine and manipulation when money is the reigning motivation over healing? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. Recently, the company that sells my ad time came to me asking if I wanted to do ads for a protein drink. I'm in the market myself for a good protein drink, so I did some digging, as I normally do, and found out that the owner of the company is a well-known biohacker who has been infusing his own son's blood into his body to try to live forever. His son, who, by the way, his ex-wife raised until his last year of high school, a life force-sucking undertaking, at which point this dude moved him in and then literally began sucking the life force out of him. I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't need a protein drink that bad. Cut to last week, this biohacker dude announces he gave himself an incurable autoimmune disorder from his so-called protocol. LOL. You reap what you sow, dude. Good luck with your bowels. Hopefully he will still live forever and just be shitting himself the entire time. Anyway, I am a female-bodied person living in the Western Hemisphere at the end of capitalism, so I am not immune to the relentless message that I should be skinnier, younger-looking, more attractive, etc. And whereas this message was mostly pushed out to women historically, now, in the age of looks-maxing, more and more boys and men are falling prey to this message that they can get the ladies if they just stack their supplements right and eat more protein. Fellas, take it from me, a person whose doctor once told them they were obese at 130 pounds, you're fine. Don't listen. You're going to literally make yourself sick trying to fit an impossible standard. At any rate, the message to women to make their bodies different is nothing new. We point back to Kate Moss as the image of the heroin chic body type. We go back a little further to Twiggy and her impossibly skinny limbs. But the truth is, women's bodies have been used as a weapon of capitalism since the dawn of capitalism. One might even argue that when we hail the paintings of full-figured women from the Renaissance as proof that women's bodies were less policed back then, we would do well to remember those ample bodies were selling an ideal of wealth and abundance. If you did things right and were wealthy enough, you would have the body to show for it. Skinny bodies back then symbolized poverty and moral depravity. So it is indeed a tale as old as time, and not one invented by Hollywood or Cosmo or TikTok. And with those impossible standards have come snake oil salesmen of all stripes promising you a miracle product that would melt away your pounds or pack on the muscle or suddenly somehow make you appealing to potential partners. Linda Hazard was one of those snake oil salesmen, saleswomen, and her methods were just as dangerous as anything we might see today. Even more so, given she was able to keep her clients a secret from prying eyes, and in so doing, get away with murder. Linda Burfield was born in Carver County, Minnesota in 1867 to Montgomery and Susan Burfield, who went on to have six more children. According to Linda's later account, Montgomery apparently found a physician who gave the family annual doses of a mercury-based antiparasitic. Whether or not this unorthodox treatment actually did act as an antiparasitic, I don't know, but Linda claims it left her with chronic bowel problems. This may be why she started messing around with diet-based cures. When she was just 18 years old, Linda married Irwin Perry, the owner of a livery business. The pair moved to Minneapolis. It's a little unclear how long Linda and her first husband were together. The Minnesota Historical Society says they separated shortly after moving to Minneapolis, but they weren't divorced until 1902, and in that time, they had two children. In Minneapolis, Linda, who had trained a bit as an osteopathic nurse, which I didn't even know was a thing, was calling herself Dr. Linda Burfield Perry and claimed she treated, quote, all nervous diseases, liquor habit, vices, painless childbirth, end quote. To be clear, she was not a licensed medical professional of any kind. Stranger, I hope I don't actually have to tell you this, but there was no such thing as painless childbirth back then. Her cure for all these conditions? Fasting. And I hope I don't have to tell you this, but no amount of fasting is going to make your childbirth painless. Sometime in 1898, at the age of 31, she had discovered the work of Dr. Edward H. Dewey, the author of The No Breakfast Plan and The Fasting Cure. The book extolled the benefits of fasting as a way of healing the body. Listen, I get that the general grasp on medicine wasn't great back then, but this smells like a grift from a mile away. You know what the body needs in order to function at a basic level, let alone heal from disease? Food. However, Linda tried the fasting cure for her digestive troubles, and apparently it worked. I mean, it stands to reason that if your body has trouble digesting things, it will feel better when it's not trying to digest things. But I guess the implication is that the fast somehow permanently fixed her tummy troubles. Linda was all in on the fasting cure and was now selling it to those who came to her for help. In the fall of 1902, as Linda and Perry were divorcing, it seems a woman named Gertrude Young came to Linda seeking help for partial paralysis. Linda started Gertrude on a total fast at the beginning of October that year. The fast was meant to last for 40 days. However, Gertrude died on November 19th, just a couple days shy of the treatment duration. At autopsy, the coroner, Dr. U.G. Williams, ruled her death a result of exhaustion due to starvation. But, for some reason, her death certificate listed paralysis as the cause. Again, stranger, I wish I understood how all this stuff works. How can the coroner determine one cause of death, but another one ends up on the death certificate? Dr. Williams was similarly confused and demanded an investigation. According to the Minnesota Historical Society, quote, the county attorney, Frederick Boardman, found no grounds for criminal prosecution. There was no law against advising a person not to eat, and Young's fast had been voluntary, end quote. And while you or I might find the unwanted attention of a possible criminal trial a deterrent, Linda, it seems, was emboldened. In a full-page newspaper ad, she declared herself a, quote, prominent osteopathic physician and touted, fasting is nature's remedy. If the remedy is death, sure. A piece on Linda on HistoryLink.org by Catherine Beck follows this story up with a rather vaguely worded bombshell. Quote, when investigators asked what happened to the victim's valuable rings, Hazard was evasive, end quote. Listen, I'm no professional researcher, and perhaps neither is the author of the piece for HistoryLink, but Beck's sources are listed, and while I personally may not have time to comb through all of them, she must have, right? What is the evidence that Linda evaded questioning on the matter of missing belongings? What did she say? Where was this noted? Perhaps Beck's editor omitted these details, but I ask these things because this is a big deal, especially considering Linda's patient's valuables would make a habit of disappearing throughout the rest of her career. Turns out Linda Hazard's cure was simply a deadly means to a more sinister end. Strangers, do you ever feel a little off at night? Are you waking up more tired than when you went to bed? It's not always just stress. Sometimes it's your body navigating the hormonal changes that come with age. It's frustrating when you can't wind down at bedtime with a calmer mind and when you're waking up with that groggy feeling the next morning. That can be a sign that your body is running low on one foundational mineral, magnesium. That's why I'm adding Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers to my nightly routine. What I really appreciate is that it's not just one type of magnesium. It's a blend of seven different forms designed to support relaxation and overall sleep quality in a more complete way. And now they've taken it further, and they just launched Magnesium Breakthrough Advanced 10. 10 bioavailable forms, plus active vitamin B6 and ionic trace minerals to support uptake. And they actually test for bioaccessibility to help ensure the magnesium is available for absorption. Their most complete formula yet for sleep, recovery, stress, and metabolic support. Here's my challenge to you. Try it, track your sleep, and see how you feel. Because it's worth it to feel like yourself again, or maybe even better. Head to bioptimizers.com/strange and use code STRANGE for 15% off your order. Use my link and code and you'll unlock exclusive discounts for friends of the show, plus surprise free bonuses and bigger discounts Bioptimizer rolls out during certain windows. You can also get free shipping on select orders. And every order is backed with their 365-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it with confidence. You won't find this on Amazon, in stores, or anywhere else. That's bioptimizers.com/strange, code STRANGE. Sometime after Gertrude Young died under the unlicensed care of Dr. Linda Burfield, Linda met a man named Sam Hazard. Beck, the author at HistoryLink, describes him as, quote, a West Point graduate who had ruined a promising military career by misappropriating Army funds. A drunk, lecher, and swindler, he had married twice before and hadn't bothered to divorce at least one of the wives when he married Linda. There was a highly publicized trial for bigamy, which ended in a 2-year prison sentence for Sam, end quote. So, a real catch. Linda and Sam married, and Linda took his foreboding last name, becoming Dr. Linda Hazard. The couple moved to Washington State, where somehow, some way, Linda managed to get licensed as a fasting specialist. Now, this makes no sense to me. First of all, what exactly did she have to prove to attain the license? Secondly, the only reason she got away with fasting Gertrude Young to death was because she wasn't licensed. Girl, what are you doing? Also, girl, what am I doing? Yelling at a woman who claimed fasting could lead to a painless childbirth? Anyway. Linda and Sam opened a sanitarium in Olalla, Washington in 1906 and named it Wilderness Heights. There, patients could come for Linda's fasting cure. In October of 1907, the Seattle Sunday Times published an article written by Linda with the headline, quote, Why I Believe in Starvation as a Cure for All Bodily Ills. The article includes this editorialized abstract at the beginning. Quote, I recognize but one disease, impure blood, one cause, impaired digestion, one cure, fasting with natural methods. She maintains that in her 11 years of practice, she has lost only 9 patients. What doctor can show a record such as that, she asks. When a physician administers a drug and his patient dies in 20 minutes, nothing is said. But when one of my charges dies, there is a great stir. If I were a member of the medical association, wore a high hat, eyeglasses, looked wondrous wise, and carried around a grip full of pills, it would all be different. But the regular doctors hate me because I have a new method. They abhor anything new. End quote. In the article, she goes on to explain that a person with enough water can live without food for 100 days, and she defends 2 of the deaths that happened under her watch as having nothing to do with the cure. I don't know. I'm not sure I would seek out a doctor who was like, have my patients died? Yes, of course they have, but honestly, we're all gonna die at some point, bro. In 1908, Linda self-published a book titled Fasting for the Cure of Disease, in which she points to yogis and Jesus who fasted for periods of time to attain spiritual wellness. Sure, maybe for days at a time, but when Jesus went into the desert for 40 days, I'm pretty sure he ate. Oddly enough, the Smithsonian, in their reporting on this section of Linda's book, expounded on it and named other famous people in history who were known to fast, including Cotton Mather. Quote, Cotton Mather thought prayer and fasting would solve the Salem witchcraft epidemic, end quote. Not exactly a poster child for great judgment. One thing these famous fasters throughout history did not do, I'm pretty sure, is give themselves enemas. According to Catherine Beck at HistoryLink, Linda's treatment included, quote, daily enemas that went on for hours and involved up to 12 quarts of water. Patients were heard to cry out in pain during these procedures. The third part of her therapy was massage that consisted of Hazard, a wiry woman said to be stronger than the average man, beating her fists against the patient's foreheads and backs. One alarmed witness reported her doing so vigorously while shouting, eliminate, eliminate, end quote. And even though Linda claimed she had only killed 9 patients, excuse me, sorry, even though Linda claimed she only had 9 patients die under her care, big difference, she proceeded to lose 4 more in 1908 and 1909. The first was a Norwegian immigrant named Daisy Maud Haglund. Under Linda's care, Daisy fasted for 50 days. 50 days! She died on February 26, 1908, leaving behind a 3-year-old son. Then, 3 more women died in the span of a year. Ida Wilcox, Blanche B. Tyndall, and Viola Heaton. In 1911, a man named Earl Edward Erdman came to her for who knows what. Tinnitus, a sore shoulder, a painless childbirth, and 3 weeks later, he was dead. The Seattle Times, which had only a few years earlier run her article touting her cure, ran an article with the headline, quote, Woman MD kills another patient. Another patient! And no one was stopping her. According to the Minnesota Historical Society, quote, patients kept on coming. Frank Southard, a law partner in the firm of Morris, Southard, and Shipley, and C.A. Harrison, publisher of Alaska Yukon magazine, died under Hazard's care a few months later, end quote. The Wellington Daily News of Kansas published this in August 1911. Quote, several of Mrs. Hazard's patients are said to have starved themselves to death, notably Lewis E. Rader, formerly deputy state treasurer, and Frank S. Southard, an attorney of Seattle, end quote. Linda was clearly not afraid of anything anymore. She was killing well-known figures in the community. According to the Smithsonian, quote, Hazard was connected to the deaths of several other wealthy individuals. Many had signed large portions of their estates over to her before their deaths. One former state legislator, Lewis E. Rader, even owned the property where her sanitarium was located. Its original name was Wilderness Heights. Rader died in May 1911 after being moved from a hotel near Pike Place Market to an undisclosed location when authorities tried to question him. End quote. It's unclear what exactly authorities were trying to question him about, but apparently several of his friends had stepped in to try to save him from Linda's grasp. And so, it seems, when authorities were called in, likely at the behest of his friends, Linda ferreted him away to a second location. But this wasn't the first time authorities became aware of questionable goings-on at what locals were calling Starvation Heights. After several inmates managed to escape and stagger into town, begging for food. The only time I have ever encountered a truly emaciated person out in the wild was in the women's bathroom at a concert in New York City. The shape she was in, if she was just suffering from a physical ailment or disease, she would have been in a hospital bed, or at the very least, a wheelchair. She looked truly next to death. It was a shocking thing to see, and I can only imagine that being just some regular Joe in 1910, working on their farm or whatever, and seeing a person in that state limping down the road, all bones and shadows, would seem like whatever that day's version of Night of the Living Dead was. And still, no one stopped Linda Hazard. An Englishman named Ivan Flux came to the States, apparently with the intention of buying a ranch, but somehow, after fasting under Linda's care for 53 days, he died with only $70 left in his coffers. A New Zealand man named Eugene Stanley Wakelin, who was only 26 when he went to Linda, did not complete his fast because instead, he killed himself. According to HistoryLink, quote, "This son of a British lord had died as a result of the bullet in his head, a presumed suicide. Linda Hazard had power of attorney over the young man's estate, and she wired his lawyer, complaining she needed more of his funds to pay his bill at the mortuary." Later, the British vice consul in Tacoma speculated that he had been shot by the Hazards, who were frustrated to learn that despite his aristocratic family, he wasn't rich. End quote. Authorities felt they couldn't do anything to stop her because Linda's patients came to her voluntarily. Also, she was licensed as a starvation doctor. Oh, and also, apparently Linda herself performed some of the autopsies. LOL. Could you imagine? A patient dies under someone's treatment plan, and then that someone is the one who performs the autopsy? Are you kidding me? I say LOL, but of course there's nothing funny about this at all. This woman was murdering people in the full light of day, and everyone was shrugging their shoulders and saying, "What can you do?" But hubris can only get you so far. Remember what happened when Icarus flew too close to the sun? After the break, Linda Hazard will finally fly too close to the sun. Stranger, I'm so excited about my newest sponsor, Vinted. I love Vinted. As some of you already know, about 98% of my wardrobe is thrifted. I will never pass up an opportunity to browse a good thrift shop. And listen, I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I bring things home without trying them on first and then realize they're the wrong fit or they're just not me. With Vinted, I can list that item and sell it from the comfort of my own home. I wish I had known about Vinted when I realized that I like looking at dresses, but I don't like wearing them. If I had known, I could have sold all those fashion mix-ups on Vinted. Plus, if you're one of those kinds of people who only likes to be photographed in an outfit once, you can do the sustainable thing and make a little cash by reselling on Vinted. And now, when I bring home yet another blazer or vest, my husband won't worry that I've cleaned out the bank account. And Vinted isn't just for clothes. They also have housewares, electronics, books, games, and more. Ready to clean out your closet and make some extra money? Download the Vinted app for free and start listing. With no seller fees, you keep every dollar you earn. And for a limited time, enjoy free shipping in the U.S. on Vinted. In 1910, a pair of wealthy sisters were traveling the world when, in British Columbia, they came across an advertisement for Dr. Linda Hazard and her miracle fasting cure. Claire and Dorothea, who went by Dora Williamson, were hypochondriacs. According to the Smithsonian, quote, "Though not seriously ill, the pair felt they were suffering from a variety of minor ailments. Dorothea complained of swollen glands and rheumatic pains, while Claire had been told she had a dropped uterus. The sisters were great believers in what we might today call alternative medicine, and had already given up both meat and corsets in an attempt to improve their health. Almost as soon as they learned of Hazard's Institute of Natural Therapeutics in Olalla, they became determined to undergo what Claire called Hazard's most beautiful treatment, end quote. However, for whatever reason, the sisters spent the summer in California and didn't actually get to Olalla until February of 1911. When they were ready for their treatment, Claire would later testify, quote, "We told her that we planned to sail soon and thought a 2 or 3 weeks treatment would be good before the sea voyage. We arranged to pay Mrs. Hazard $60 a month each for treatment in Seattle. We wanted Mrs. Hazard to examine us, but she said a physical examination could not be made until the fasting had proceeded for some time. She gave us a treatment the first day. She pounded us on the back and hammered us about the head with her fists," end quote. When they arrived in Washington, Linda told them the sanitarium wasn't ready, which is odd because I'm fairly sure she had already been treating people there for a couple years. She put the sisters up in an apartment in Seattle where, according to the Smithsonian, quote, "She began feeding them a broth made from canned tomatoes, a cup of it twice a day and no more. They were given hours-long enemas in the bathtub, which was covered with canvas supports when the girls started to faint during their treatment," end quote. I would have to imagine the canvas was also there to catch whatever detritus came out of the women as a result of the enemas. Anyway. While Linda administered hours-long enemas and beat the women with her fists, she managed to extract information about their wealth and various possessions and offered, out of the kindness of her heart, to store their jewels and real estate deeds for them. According to HistoryLink, quote, "By April, the sisters were emaciated and delirious. They were transferred to Olalla by twin ambulances and a private launch. Just before the ambulance set out for the dock, Dr. Hazard's private attorney obtained a shaky signature from Claire. It was a codicil to her will, leaving a monthly stipend of £25 per year to the Hazard's Institute, adding that in case of death, she wanted her body cremated under the charge and direction of Linda Burfield Hazard," end quote. According to later testimony, when the women came to Linda for treatment, Dora weighed 109 pounds and Claire weighed 126 pounds. By the time they were moved to the sanitarium in Olalla, the women weighed about 70 pounds each. And these women were in their 30s. Apparently, the sisters were used to people disapproving of the treatments they sought, so they didn't share what was happening. However, one of them sent a rather cryptic telegram to their childhood nanny, Margaret Conway. What the telegram said is unknown. However, in a letter Claire sent shortly after, she said, quote, "We have been all the time either on a very small quantity of strained fruit juices or strained vegetable broths. Dora may take months to get her brain right, which you know has been so weak the last few years. Hazard found us in a very bad state indeed, which must have ended our lives in a few years if we had struggled on. I am wonderfully better, in fact, getting stronger by leaps, and I can tell you life is becoming a very different thing to both of us. We feel we can never be thankful enough to the great blessings we are receiving. No one could have made us more perfectly at home or give us such genuine love and care than herself and her husband, and she surrounds us with love from those who help to care for us. She is a wonderful woman," end quote. I don't know if this was a subconscious cry for help or what, but between this and whatever the telegram said, Margaret was alarmed enough to set sail from Australia to Washington as soon as she could. She arrived on June 1st to the awful news that Claire was dead. Sam Hazard let Margaret know that Dora was insane. According to HistoryLink, quote, "Then she was taken to Olalla for a reunion with Dorothea, who was by now a human skeleton living alone in a rough cabin, no better than a shack," end quote. Dora was only 50 pounds. Obviously, Margaret demanded to know what happened to Claire, but according to the Smithsonian, Linda said, quote, "The culprit was a course of drugs administered to Claire in childhood, which had shrunk her internal organs and caused cirrhosis of the liver," end quote. The piece in the Smithsonian continues, quote, Margaret Conway wasn't trained as a doctor, but she knew something was amiss. Claire's body, embalmed and on display at the Butterworth Mortuary near Pike Place Market, looked like it belonged to another person. The hands, facial shape, and color of the hair all looked wrong to her. Once she was in Alala, Margaret discovered that Dora weighed only about 50 pounds. Her sitting bones protruded so sharply she couldn't sit down without pain. But she didn't want to leave Alala despite the fact that she was clearly starving to death. End quote. While at the sanitarium visiting Dora, Margaret was approached by several other patients, basically begging for help. According to HistoryLink, quote, although the patients were usually separated from each other, they were all let out for a 4th of July celebration. Two of them approached Margaret Conway and begged her to get them out of the place, saying they were prisoners. End quote. Margaret also noticed Linda wearing Claire's clothing and jewelry. But Margaret felt stuck. It seemed to her that not only was Linda a doctor, but she was apparently respected in the community. Margaret considered herself of a lower class than Linda and didn't dare speak up to her. She did, however, contact the girl's uncle for help. Unfortunately, there wasn't much anyone could do because, much to Margaret's horror, she found out the women had signed over their estates to the Hazards, which was, at the time, around $400,000, or more than $14 million in today money. According to the Smithsonian, quote, the doctor had been appointed the executor of Claire's considerable estate, as well as Dora's guardian for life. Dora had also signed over her power of attorney to Samuel Hazard. Meanwhile, the Hazards had helped themselves to Claire's clothes, household goods, and an estimated $6,000 worth of the sisters' diamonds, sapphires, and other jewels. Dr. Hazard even delivered a report to Margaret concerning Dora's mental state while dressed in one of Claire's robes. End quote. When Margaret finally brought herself to announce that she was leaving and taking Dora with her, quote, Dr. Hazard said Dorothea was not free to leave. The Hazards had obtained a legal guardianship of Dorothea. They explained that Dorothea would be spending the rest of her life with them. End quote. Margaret apparently had to sneak off the property to send a cable to the sister's uncle, John Herbert. I imagine this is because if she openly left the property, the Hazards wouldn't have let her come back. Uncle Herbert arrived and had to haggle for the release of his niece Dora. According to HistoryLink, quote, the Hazards presented them with a bill for $2,000 and said they wouldn't allow her to leave without some cash. Her uncle negotiated a smaller ransom. End quote. And while Dora had not wanted to leave, once she was off the property, she opened up about the abuse she and her sister endured under the treatment of Dr. Linda Hazard. According to a piece in the Tacoma Times from 1911, quote, Miss Dorothea Williamson, the dead woman's sister, who was taken from Hazard Lodge in Kitsap County when but a wreck of 61 pounds, told today at the home of British Consul C.E. Lucien Agassiz of her terrible experiences under Dr. Hazard's treatment, end quote. After the break, it's comeuppance time for Dr. Don't Even Eat an Apple a Day. Strangers, I don't know about you, but to me, August feels like the Sunday of summer. And do I get the Sunday scaries? You know I do. But with Quince, at least I know that when the days start to get shorter and the nights get cooler, I'll be cozy and warm in my fall and winter favorites from Quince, like my Mongolian cashmere sweaters and the softest sweats I've ever worn. And with Quince's incredible prices and their ethical and sustainable standards, I can feel good about grabbing a couple new pieces to keep me going through the cold months. Quince specializes in effortless, high-quality essentials like ultra-soft, organic cotton, and premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They also have premium stretch denim starting at just $50 with the kind of perfect fit, structure, and weight you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/strange. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/strange. Dr. Linda Hazard was finally arrested in August of 1911. By the time the trial got underway at the beginning of 1912, Dora had gained back about 50 pounds and was described by the San Francisco Call as having a, quote, firm step, looking the picture of health with rosy cheeks and bright blue eyes, end quote. Dora's uncle John Herbert, when called to testify, said he was barred from seeing Claire's body for some time and that when he finally did, he didn't believe it was her. He said, quote, I certainly was in doubt whether that was her body. It did not look like Claire. The hair was a lighter brown than hers, and her face and hands were changed, end quote. When asked why he didn't demand an investigation as to the identity of the body, he said, quote, this was at a funeral service held in memory and in honor of my niece. I knew she was dead, and whether the body in the coffin was hers or another was immaterial at the time. I was too distressed to think of any investigation, and at that time, I had no suspicion that my niece had met with anything like foul play. At that time, it made no difference to me whether there was any body there, end quote. As for her part, Linda Hazard repeated her belief that it was impossible to starve to death. As she had explained in her 1908 book, quote, death in the fast never results from deprivation of food, but is the inevitable consequence of vitality sapped to the last degree by organic imperfection, end quote. She tried to portray herself as the victim of a witch hunt, essentially, saying she was being attacked for being a powerful woman and for promoting methods not approved by the establishment. According to the Smithsonian, there were a few who were willing to testify in her defense. Quote, other names in the natural health world agreed, and several offered their support during their trial. Henry S. Tanner, a doctor who fasted publicly for 40 days in New York City in 1880, offered to testify in order to, quote, hold up the conventional medical fraternity to the derision of the world. He was never given a chance, end quote. Listen, just because some people don't die from days of fasting, and frankly, who knows if he wasn't sneaking food, doesn't mean that fasting doesn't cause death. According to HistoryLink, quote, Dr. Hazard had her defenders, including loyal staff members and patients. John Ivor Haglund testified that even though his wife Daisy had been Hazard's first Washington victim, he had faith in Dr. Hazard and had taken his little boy Ivar to her for treatment 3 times a week, even after his wife's death, end quote. Wow. Bold move, dude. Fortunately, Ivar survived and went on to open a successful seafood chain in Washington state. Linda told reporters, quote, I intend to get on the stand and show up that bunch. They've been playing checkers, but it's my move. I'll show them a thing or two when I get on the stand, end quote. I mean, she definitely lost the metaphor, but whatever. Despite her intention to tell them all what was what on the stand, her lawyer was like, girl, LOL, you're not getting on the stand. Nellie Sherman, a nurse who worked for Linda, did take the stand and vehemently denied any wrongdoing on anyone's part at the facility. According to trial coverage from the Billings Gazette, quote, Ms. Sherman's testimony occupied nearly the entire day's session. At no time, she said, did Mrs. Hazard withhold a proper quantity of nourishment from the patient. We felt sometimes, the witness said, that we were even giving the patient too much food, considering that all of which she partook appeared to be injurious. She denied statements made by the state's witness that a man had aided in administering baths to the patient. No undue influence was exercised over Miss Williamson, she asserted. Of Miss Dorothea Williamson, the sister who survived the treatment, Miss Sherman testified that she was mentally unsound much of the time, and she had been able to assimilate a greater quantity of food than had Claire, end quote. She was crazy. That's why she was able to eat more food, obviously. Also, if you're a healthcare practitioner and someone comes to you who you think is mentally unsound, maybe get that dealt with before delivering them whatever shitty treatment you're peddling. Then again, Linda also claimed fasting could cure nerves. sigh. It did not take long for the jury to make their decision. Linda was charged with manslaughter and sentenced to 2 to 25 years hard labor at the penitentiary in Walla Walla, although another source claims it was 5 to 25 years. And her medical license, which she shouldn't have had to begin with, was revoked. But while she was released on bond, during her appeals process, according to author Kenneth V. Iserson in his 2002 book, Demon Doctors, Physicians as Serial Killers, quote, although she had supposedly suspended her practice during this period, she supervised a protege who starved one infant to death and then tried to repeat the process on a second infant and her mother. The mother, who was known to have received osteopathic treatments from Hazard, died of starvation, but the infant was rescued. Simultaneously, another emaciated person was found dead at Wilderness Heights, end quote. In case that wasn't clear, stranger, she helped kill 3 more people before going to jail. After a 2-year appeal process, Linda Hazard entered prison, where she went on a fast to prove it totally wasn't fatal. According to one newspaper account, quote, Mrs. Linda Burfield Hazard, the fast cure specialist who is serving a term in the state penitentiary as a result of the application of her cure to a woman who died while taking it near Seattle, is trying the cure on herself. Tuesday will mark the end of the 3rd week during which she has taken no food. She will then resume eating for a few weeks and later again try her cure. Mrs. Hazard decided she must submit to an operation, but when denied permission to go to Seattle to have it performed, sought to avoid it by taking her starvation cure. Aside from a slight loss of strength, there is no change in her health, the attendants state. Before the officials would allow the experiment to proceed, they had her give a written release from liability. As long as she had her senses and feels like going ahead with the cure, Warden Drum says no objection will be made. She has been here about a year. End quote. I don't know what the operation was for, and I don't know why she was allowed to eat after 3 weeks of fasting, but she'd sooner than expected be allowed much, much more. Her freedom. That's right, stranger. The reign of Linda Hazard wasn't over yet. Strangers, I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Avocado Green Mattress. Their certified organic mattresses sleep cool, relieve pressure, and support your body so you can enjoy deep, restorative sleep. They don't use polyurethane foams. Instead, every mattress is made with healthy, natural materials. They're even handmade. Come lie down, see, and feel for yourself. Unlike most mattress brands that only sell online, Avocado has real showrooms and retail partners across the country where you can walk in, lie down, and feel the difference before you buy. Their products are made, not manufactured, with thoughtful craftsmanship, creating products that feel intentionally made rather than mass-produced. Avocado mattresses are designed to provide both comfort and proper support, helping your body stay aligned while still feeling cozy. With natural materials that perform, like real, certified organic cotton, wool, and latex. It just feels better. Choosing Avocado is good for you and good for the planet. It's one of the most sustainable choices you can make. Avocado products are made, not manufactured, and thoughtfully crafted with real materials to deliver lasting comfort and support. You can experience them in person at an Avocado showroom or a premier retailer near you, or shop online at avocadogreenmattress.com/strange to check out their mattress and furniture sale. That's avocadogreenmattress.com/strange. avocadogreenmattress.com/strange. After so many died, and a brave former nanny infiltrated the Hazard's operation of horrors to finally get Miss Skinny behind bars, Linda served just 2 years and was then pardoned by Governor Ernest Lister, who was basically like, guys, Claire Williamson was a wealthy woman and she should have known better. Even if that were a good defense, what about the couple of dozen other people she killed over her years in practice? Like, I get that she wasn't put on trial for those, but once she was in jail, I don't know, maybe don't let her out again and then pardon her? Like, what is happening? In 1915, this bitch showed back up in Washington still running her mouth. She told the Seattle Star, quote, "I was convicted in 1912 by a grossly ignorant jury. I was persecuted by the medical profession simply because I had another way," end quote. The only thing the jury was grossly ignorant of, apparently, were the many, many other people Linda killed before Claire Williamson. Of her time in prison, Linda had this to say, quote, "I am weak, but not mentally weak, although that is one of the things I had to guard most against. I kept mentally vigorous by reading, reading, reading. I went through volume after volume of science, philosophy, and fiction. Twice I fainted in prison. Each time I went for 28 days without food. Sometimes I painted," end quote. Yeah, you fainted because you were hungry, dumbass. And she continued, quote, "The system is wrong. The wicked at heart are thrown together and the prisons serve as a clearinghouse for them. They exchange ideas. Prison life is destructive," end quote. This is one thing I agree with this lunatic about. In 1920, stranger, you ready for this? She opened a new sanitarium. According to HistoryLink, quote, "By 1920, she had made enough money to come back to Olalla and build her dream sanitarium at Starvation Heights. Since the state of Washington had pulled her medical license, she called it a school of health. The lavish building included a basement autopsy room. Hazard continued starving people to death," end quote. She ran this death house for 15 years. According to the Smithsonian, quote, "The institute burned to the ground in 1935, and 3 years later, Hazard, then in her early 70s, fell ill and undertook a fast of her own. It failed to restore her to health, and she died shortly thereafter," end quote. And so, her miracle cure didn't work on herself. What a poetic ending to a frustratingly preventable story. Who knows how many people she killed in those 15 years? There doesn't seem to be a good record of it, but considering she killed at least 15 people before receiving an official pardon, literally getting away with murder over and over again, I'm going to go ahead and guess there were many more. I like to imagine it was one of her trapped patients, whom she called students at that point, who took it upon herself to burn the place down. It's highly questionable that Linda Hazard's intention was ever to cure people of anything. Her cure was more about getting people into extremely vulnerable positions so she could steal their shit. Maybe she started out believing her own bullshit and truly wanted to help people, but it seems to me that if she hadn't figured out how to exploit her patients for their wealth, she easily could have faded into obscurity or chosen some other grift to peddle. Call me, I don't know, someone with a basic level of humanity, but if even one person died under my care, I would probably pause and think seriously about the kind of care I was administering. If two people died, I would throw myself off a cliff. If three people died and I somehow hadn't changed my treatment plan, that would serve as clear proof I didn't care if my patients died or not. And thank God I'd be at the bottom of a cliff anyway by that point. I don't know what happened to Linda Hazard in her youth that made her so callous. Maybe it was ingesting all that mercury. But somehow, she became a monster. You can blame the general lack of scientific knowledge at the beginning of the 20th century, but I'm pretty sure our ancestors back in sub-Saharan Africa hundreds of thousands of years ago understood that if you don't eat for a long period of time, you're going to die. Ask anyone from any country that's been through a famine. Or maybe they just weren't getting their daily enemas and beatings. People who tout miracle cures and weight loss regimens generally don't give a shit about your weight or health. They want you to buy a product. They want to prey on your insecurities and get you to subscribe to their vitriol and buy fucking Bitcoin. If you die because you stacked too many supplements or whatever, they don't care. The people who make my antidepressants don't really care about my depression. They just want me to buy their medicine. The companies that make cancer drugs love cancer. It keeps them in business. Selling salves to insecurity, or worse, promises of cures for chronic ailments, is the new version of handing out blankets laden with smallpox. This strategy is meant to keep us sick and dependent on the ones handing out the blankets, and capitalism feeds on it. I don't know. I used to not be into the whole they're trying to kill us conspiracy, but like, it kind of seems like they're trying to kill us. In the meantime, stranger, if you're hurting, call a doctor, a real one. And if they suggest you start dieting for the sake of your digestive health or your unrelated ailments or simply your BMI, call another one. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. In 1982, Ohio State Representative John Ashbrook died suddenly under suspicious circumstances. But John's was not the family's only unexplained death, the Ashbrook family's mysterious deaths. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grab Bag Collab. Special thanks to Grab Bag executive producer level member Richard Nacy. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Joe Gourdette, editorial help from Becca D. Gregorio, and sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine. Music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you'd like to support the show, please consider becoming a member of Grab Bag Collab. We have built an incredible community of listeners who support a small, profit-sharing, woman and non-binary-owned business. At Grab Bag, we're committed to giving a platform to voices who might otherwise get overlooked by bigger networks. Plus, all our contributors get to keep ownership of their content. It's a whole new approach to podcasting. Come check it out at grabbagcollab.com. For just $4 a month or $40 a year, you can get Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. And for just $8 or $80 a year, you'll get all the shows Grab Bag has to offer, including my other shows, Dear Daisy and Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, as well as Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries, The Catalyst, Tales of the Resistance, What If They're Wrong, and all of our quarterly shows. You can even sign up to join our live recordings. We have book clubs, live hangs, watch parties, and more. If you're feeling extra generous, you can sign up at the $50 level for even more perks, including all our shows and extras, and have your name read in the credits of our shows. Head to grabbagcollab.com today to join. To suggest an episode for Strange and Unexplained, you can email me directly at contact@strangeandunexplainedpod.com or go to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. You can follow me on Instagram at SNUPod or Daisy Egan and join the Facebook page to be a part of the conversation. Thanks so much for listening, and stay strange.